Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads, where I'll be talking about the books from week beginning 11/30/2015 to 12/6/2015. Again, the scores are 5 love it, 4 really like it, 3 like it, and 2 did not like it, 1 hated it. And before I get into that and the breakdown, I'm going to talk about a couple of topics. The first is recently purchased books. So for this week, I got a book that I've been looking at for quite some time. It's Showcase number 75, and it's the first volume of Showcase from DC Comics. And this is the first appearance of Hawk and Dove. So I'm really happy to get that book. Was something that I've been looking at for quite some time. On the other end, I also got a bunch of Brave and the Bolds in no particular order, because I don't have them in order. We got Batman and the Flash, which is Brave and the Bold 81, which has him and the Flash fighting this guy called Bork. It's kind of a fun name. We also have Batman Aquaman number 82, and I'm a huge Aquaman fan, so I'm looking forward to that one. Sorry. We have a Batman Wonder Woman, which she's my favorite all-time female character, and always will be. I absolutely love Wonder Woman, everything about her. And on this cover, it's got Batman, looks like in a racing car, and he's crashing into Diana Prince. In this point in Wonder Woman's career, she's in the white outfit, and she's powerless. So it's called the Widowmaker. And it looks like they're in some kind of race. Sorry, I need to get a sip of water because I got like that thing in my throat. All right. I also have Brave and the Bold number 99, which is a reprint, but it's Batman and the Flash, and backup of the Viking Prince. This is the big one that I was really looking forward to. It's Brave and the Bold number 85 with a Neil Adams cover. And why is this book important? It's Batman and Green Arrow, but it's the first appearance of the new Green Arrow costume, the one that we know Ollie of. And that is something I've always wanted. So having said that, I am going to talk about a few detective comics that I bought. Okay, and after I stop coughing, I'm going to resume. We have a few Detective Comics. We got Detective Comics 366, and this is Batman's Last Will and Testament, which is really cool. On the cover, it's a 12-cent edition, just to give you perspective. It says, "I have only an hour to live. It's up for Robin to find my killer so I could avenge my death from the grave." So that's a real cool issue. And then we got a Detective Comics 406, which is Batman and Batgirl. And on the cover, it looks like he's got like a, looks like he's in some kind of torture device and there's an axe coming towards him. And it says, "No power on earth can save me now." That's a 15-cent edition. We have a 30-cent edition. It's number 469. I can't remember if it's 468. I think 468 is the first appearance of Silver St. Cloud. And I believe this is the first, or maybe it's 470. This is the first appearance of Dr. Phosphorus. So we've even seen him in the New 52. And Detective Comics 472, which is the death of Hugo Strange, at least the first death of Hugo Strange. So that is, you know, with a Marshall Rogers cover in Austin inks. That is a 35-cent edition. And on the cover, it's got, like, Batman laying there, and it says, "Batman is dead. Long live the new Batman." And then last but not least, we have Detective Comics 487. which is one of those dollar comics, and I have a fond memory of these dollar comics when I was younger, very much younger, and picking up comics off the spinner rack. I would go for so many of these dollar comics just because they had so much content for your money, and you could spend hours reading Detective Comics. And then back then, you would read your comics 3 or 4 times just because you didn't have as many, and that's when you would just read 'em, and then trade 'em. So that is the back issues for this week. The last thing I want to talk about is I got an iTunes review from Drew, and I think it's the Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, which is one of the podcasts that I listen to religiously. It's Drew and his brother Kyle. I like the chemistry between them. They're two brothers. I don't agree with them a lot, but I like their humor and I like what they do. They essentially have one segment which tells you what's coming for the week of and what they speculate on, which is kind of interesting. Even though I never sell my books, it's always interesting to see what's going on. Like I watch speculation sites. It's always interesting. It's usually interesting because I buy 90% of what they speculate on. I mean, not Drew and Kyle, but like the speculation websites that I do go to. So check out Comics for Fun and Profit. And thank you, Drew. If you did leave that iTunes review, as the first iTunes review for Mike M's Weekly Reads on the Geek Brunch podcast feed, which is cool to have. And the thing that he talked about, me and him were chatting a little bit on Twitter about, was he asked me how I felt about the cover prices going up. And what he's referring to is a lot of the new Marvel number ones are launching with the $4.99 cover price. The annuals have already been $4.99, but we're starting to see a lot of $4.99 covers in the marketplace. And his question to me was, does the $4.99 cover price he doesn't like for one thing, and then he's like, don't you think it's gonna be a very hard for new readers to jump in on a comic book that's $5? And the other thing that they talked about on the comic book page, which Drew is also a part of, him and John Mayo, was, you know, the four. He's actually, when he grades the comics, he's considering what he paid for the comic, which is really interesting. I try not to do that, but I can see where he's coming from. I think about like 6 years, 7 years ago when I was podcasting, and there was still, you know, draw the line at $2.99, and I went through this phase where I started to get really frustrated with Marvel because they were $3.99. And I pretty much dropped almost everything, every single book, except the ones that I was most loyal to, which is like Daredevil. Daredevil's a character that I almost have a full run of, and that means every volume that's been ever published. I'm still working on a few titles from Volume 1, and some of them are quite expensive because it's like number 1, number 2, number 8, number, you know, some of the early editions. And then there's some that aren't so expensive, but it's about 20 or so. And then after that, I have every volume of Daredevil. So I don't want to. I like Daredevil a lot. The other character I like a lot is Black Panther. Like, I'll always get Black Panther book and Fantastic Four. But I went through a stage where, you know, they went $3.99 and I stopped. If it wasn't for DCBS, which I get 50% to 40% off a cover of DC and Marvel, I think I would be a little more animated about the cover price increase. It's usually only one issue, and they usually give you double the size, so I'm not. It's not affecting me, but I could see how it'll impact new readers. But my thoughts on new readers are they're few and far between. And for every new reader you get, you're gonna lose readers because you just have attrition because of the. They're so damn expensive. This hobby is expensive as hell. Especially if you're really into it. And what I mean by that is like getting at least 20 to, you know, 30 books, much less what I get, which is like 250 monthly comics a month. So it's an expensive hobby, and like DCBS, like you just say, is 50% to 40% off. So let's say if I didn't get that, and let's say I got zilch, which I don't think that'll ever happen. Even at my local comic book shop, which I get some DCs from because I like the guy a lot, I get 25% discount, and then I'm on a grandfather, like at least a temporary basis, a 50% off of all back issues. And usually he lets me grade them. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, for one thing, I don't think new readers can get into this hobby because what do they have to compete against them? They have other media. They have computers, they have movies, they have TV, they have books, all of which are cheaper, and they provide more hours of entertainment, at least I believe they do, than a comic book, especially if you just read it once. If you read it like 4 or 5 times, then you probably get like a really good value for, whatever you pay. Very seldom do I reread because of the quantity of incoming books that I have. But I do reread some, especially if I have to get something digitally, like from Comixology, and then I get the paper copy because I missed an issue. I'll reread it when I have the paper because I don't like reading digital comics, and that's just a personal thing, and I'll talk about that on a future episode. So after having said that, I am going to talk about the weekly reads. So let's kick this off. So what we had this week is we had a total of 39 comics. We had 6 Valiant, 1 Udon, 4 Marvel, 9 Image, 18 DC, and 1 Amigo. So let's start at the bottom. And yes, we had a 2 out of 5, which means I didn't like it. And this one I didn't even buy. Well, I guess I bought it. It's a Loot Crate book. And so it was a surprise it came in on the Loot Crate. It was Street Fighter Hyper Looting number 1, and it was a bunch of the Street Fighter characters, which I've played the game briefly, like, but I'm not a huge fan. I don't play a lot of video games, so, but I'm aware of it. When I played video games, it was like Zaxxon and Space Invaders and Asteroids, all the old school Donkey Kong, and that I'm old school on the arcade games. And then when they came, I think the only modern game that I, or Tron was my favorite, but the only modern game that I played that was fairly like 90s, or maybe it was 90s, early 90s, was not Street Fighter, but Virtual Fighter. It was from the Sega Genesis. I really liked that game. And they had that at the arcade first. But Street Fighter, I'm aware of. I've played it. I'm no good at it, but this was my first opportunity to read the characters in a comic book format because it came as a Loot Crate, and it was the art was okay. It was almost like an animated type style, like if they were going to make a cartoon of this. But it was kind of like a really bad plot. It was like the Street Fighters, fighting to try to save a Loot Crate box, and it just was ridiculous, and I didn't like it. I kind of wish I would have just bagged and boarded it and put it away instead of sitting there and reading it. But usually when I get a Loot Crate, I already have the comic, like it's a Loot Crate of something like, Avengers or Secret Wars or some kind of comic I already have read, and it's just an alternate cover. But this is like a book I didn't buy, and I wanted to read it, and I didn't like it. But if you are a fan of Street Fighter, you might like it, and I think it's kicking off a new series. Matter of fact, at the comic shop today, I saw the new series, and this didn't motivate me to pick it up, but it was a different writer, and it might be pretty good, so I don't know. I'm probably not gonna try it. So at the 3 out of 5s, we had a few. We had Venom Space Knight. This was the relaunch. The creative team on this was Ella Very, incredible artist, beautiful cover. And the writer is Robbie Thompson. This was an okay series. It started off with a lot of action and ended with a lot of action, and didn't do a lot of characterization, but it looked beautiful. Ariel Olivetti is an awesome painter, and he's got this painted style, and I've always enjoyed his work. But I'm gonna stick on board with this as long as the they have that 50% off bundle on DCBS. And then once they quit the bundle, which means the discount will go from 50 to 40, I'll reconsider it, because I'll probably start dropping some Marvels. This one I like the character, so he's got a lot of it has potential for me to keep it just based on the character. Whereas others like Deadpool, I don't like the character. Even though I enjoy the comic sometimes, that one might go even if I like it even more. I don't understand. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's just me. So the next one we got is Justice League Dark Side War Shazam number one. I thought I would like this one a lot more, but it didn't read very fluid. So this was Dark Side War Shazam. I wanted to like it more because I really like Shazam. I like the character. I like the old school Shazam, and I like the new, 52 version as well. And I like the Flashpoint Shazam. I've always just liked the character. I always find him fascinating that a kid could say these and turn into a man and have the powers of a god. It's always been fascinating for me. And this one is from the actual Justice League Dark Side War by Geoff Johns, and it was written by Steve Orlando, who you might know from the Midnighter, and the artist is fabulous. He's one of my favorites, Scott Collins. And I guess the problem I had with it was the writing. I didn't like it as much as I could have. I still enjoyed it. I thought it had the most impact of all these side stories because I don't want to give it away, but it's a game changer. The outcome of this book is a game changer for the future of Shazam if they choose to keep it that way. So if you're a Shazam fan, it's a must read. You have to read it, even if you don't like it, because you have to have this in your stack to know this is part of history here. So I enjoyed it. I don't want to give away what happens because it's fairly new and somebody might want to pick it up. This is the interesting thing about these series is I think they were fairly under ordered because they were called gods and something else, monsters or something like that, in the pre-solicits, and then when they re-came back out with it, it changed to Justice League Dark Side War, and Justice League Dark Side War is usually the number two or three seller from DC Comics. So I think if they had solicited it right with the right name, it would have changed a lot of people's mind, and there might have been more on the shelf. But even my comic shop, they sold through the day of because he underordered dramatically. So there was that, and then the next one was Justice League Superman, which I enjoyed slightly more. This has to do with Superman kind of being like he becomes the in Darkseid War. All the Justice, not all the Justice League members, but a lot of them, including Luthor, and these get godlike powers. Batman's on the Mobius chair, and a lot of the heroes become like godlike. So Shazam gets something, and Superman becomes godlike, and he goes after Luthor, and something happens to Luthor, and that book just came out. Matter of fact, my shop had no Luthor books on the shelf. Even though I didn't pre-order any of these because I think it was just my oversight. Not because I usually buy every single DC comic. It was my oversight because I clicked on Dark Side War or whatever it was solicited at, Gods and Monsters number one, and I didn't click on the others. I didn't. I guess when I glanced at them on DCBS, I thought, oh, those are just variant covers, and I skipped it, not realizing that you had Flash, Green Lantern, Superman, Lex Luthor, Batman, and Shazam. So there were several of them. It's like the fifth week event kind of thing. This the Superman title was by Francis Manapul and Bong Dazo. Bong Dazo did a really good job. I don't I'm not too familiar with his work, but it was pretty doggone good. And as I said, three means that I was entertained and I liked it. I didn't really like it, but I liked it. So that exits out of the threes and jumps into the four out of fives, which means I really liked it. And we got Justice League, Dark Side War, Green Lantern. This one had a little more meat in it and a lot of backstory, and I think this was by Tom King and Doc Shaner. Doc Shaner is somebody I was following on Twitter, and he's just starting to get a lot of work. He had some Convergence, Shazam, and he's starting to get more work. And he's really got like this art style that looks very Golden Age slash Silver Age, and it looks awesome. Like he did Convergence, Shazam. Looked amazing, and he did a fantastic job with this. And Tom King is an up-and-coming writer for DC and Marvel, and he's getting a lot of critical acclaim, and he did a really good job with this with Hal Jordan, who seems to have he seems to be very different in the New 52. And what I mean is, he has a lot of faults, and doesn't seem as brave, and makes really bad decisions. And it looks a lot different than if you were reading pre-New 52. But you go through the trials, and right now he's kind of like a rogue, and he looks weird, and it's very different. But it's still entertaining, and this one. This one's kind of weird because it doesn't like fit into the timeline of where he's at right now. He actually looks like the Green Lantern that we know, and it's tying into this event. And the one thing that is really bizarre about the Justice League books is they're not in like the current timeline of all the individual heroes. Like Batman is Batman, he's Bruce Wayne, whereas in the comic book he's not, he's Commissioner Gordon, and Superman's not depowered, and Green Lantern is not in his rogue state, and Flash is, the way he was before. And the New Gods even look totally different. They look like in the New 52, we've seen the New Gods in Wonder Woman, and we've seen them in several other titles, especially Green Lantern. There was a big old crossover with the new gods, where they were going after the rings, and Geoff Johns kind of just said, "Fuck it, I know what the new gods were, and I'm gonna make them what I want them to be." So it's weird if you think of things in terms of continuity, but it is highly entertaining. And then you have the other Justice League books, which is on its own timeline, Justice League of America. So it's kind of confusing if you're trying to put it all in, but I would just say sit back in your chair and relax and read the story and place it wherever you want. You could place it, before all the radical changes after Convergence, or place it in the New 52 somewhere, and go with that. Just keep track of it in your own mind. It's a good story, so just sit back and relax and enjoy. Death of Wolverine, Weapon X, number four. So it had Logan's Legacy. I enjoyed Logan's Legacy more than Weapon X, but they're both vital because both series kind of merge into one. This is a Charles Soule book, and that they becomes Wolverines, and I haven't started reading that yet, but this is after the death of Wolverine, so I'm far behind on that, and I was just catching up. But I really enjoyed it. It was highly entertaining, and there's a lot of new characters that Charles Soule did introduce in this series, so they could be huge collector's items if any of these guys take off. Because this book had a lot of new characters that came out, that weren't there before. Then we got Flash 45 and 46. This is still doing the Professor Zoom story arc, where he's fighting a lot of these characters, and a few of them actually turn on Zoom. I really enjoyed it, and I think if I was reading it month to month, I'd feel a little different. But because I read these in like a bulk, like I read like almost 20 issues of Flash, it really made me appreciate the overarching story. And the only thing that I think that Venditti and Jensen did I would have done differently is they had the future Barry, which was the, we'll just call him the blue suited Flash, going after Flash, and then you have Zoom. And I don't think I would have done that, and the reason is because they're very, very similar characters. Future Barry was a lot like Zoom, in my opinion, and now we're in the Zoom story arc, so I'm looking really forward to seeing them do something different. And even though I've enjoyed it, I want to see what else they can do. And this series is going to be weird. I kind of cheated with the next one. It's Trees 1 through 8. I gave a 4 out of 5. But I'm going to tell you the truth. And the truth is, when I read Trees number 1, I rated it a 2. I read Trees number 2 and 3, and I rated them a 3. And then after I read 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, I just decided to bulk them all into 4. And it was because I really should have kept the original ratings. But after I saw the overarching story, I became highly addicted to this story arc. It's very interesting because these weird ships that look like huge straight staffs just plant themselves strategically all over the Earth. And you're basically dealing with the ramifications of those. And at this point, they haven't really done anything. And what do I mean is they're there. Some of them are spewing some toxic stuff, but just in the immediate area. And some of them are spreading stuff, but they're doing it at a really slow pace. And Warren Ellis does tell an interesting plot. He just never gets you attached to any of the characters. The characters are just a plot device, and this is highly plot driven, and I think that's what its weakness was. Like in one, you don't really get a good sight of any of the characters. You understand the different characters and their situations, but you don't bond with them. And that was my biggest complaint with that, and why I originally came with it. So what I would say is I had already bought these, like all of the single issues, and then just read them. I read them for Geek Brunch because my co-host Bill said, I'd like to talk about Trees. And I said, okay, I'll read some of it so we can discuss it. And I didn't think I would like it as much as I did, especially after reading the first three, and I trudged on. So it's really interesting in the fact that if I had read it immediately, I might have dropped it. And I'm so glad that I didn't, because I really like it. And even in next week's, I've already read 9, 10, and 11, and I'll probably be caught up by the time of next week's episode. So it turned out to be really interesting. And then we get to Unity 22 through 25. This is the finale of the Warmonger and, Matt Kent's last run before handing off the reins to Asmus. And man, when Matt was, Unity's been one of my favorite books. I've absolutely loved his stuff. Even though it's the lowest selling Valiant book, it has been one of my favorites. Like, if you look at my favorites, it's all the ones that Matt Kent does, Rye. Ninjak is my favorite, and then this one. And the only one that's recently went ahead just recently is Bloodshot. I got really hooked into that book. But Unity's been really good, and I was really upset when Asmus was taking the reins, because I loved him on Quan and Woody, but I didn't think he could take this team like what Matt Kent's done and what he's built. And I was real hesitant in saying, what is he going to turn this into, a comedy? But he did a really, really good job. It had to do with the Armor Hunter story, and then 25 was a tribute with many, many, many writers. And that was done really well, even though it was kind of told through the eyes of Quantum and Woody. It was like them say, what if we made a Unity movie, and going to like a producers or movie houses and saying, we can help you make that movie. It came across really good and really interesting, and some of it was kind of funny. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. So that's where that ended. And then we get into Jimmy Robinson's The Empty. If you like the movie Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar, I think you'll like this, except it takes place in a desert world, and also a world that's very fruitful. And there's two different creatures. One of these creatures, this area, they struggle to survive. There's just no food. It's like desert. And the other one seems like it's very prosperous for society. And these people have long necks, and they look totally different. And it has to do with a murder, like them thinking they killed somebody from one society, and then that this person coming in the other society. And it's really interesting. Jimmy Robinson does it all. He does everything. I think he does even the lettering. He does the writing, the art, everything. He's done Bomb Queen, and it's been amazing, and then Five Weapons and several other story arcs. And he's a knock it out of the park guy. He's one of those guys that you read and you're amazed that he hasn't taken off with the large culture, I mean comic buying culture, because he's phenomenal. He's always delivers a good product, and he always comes through, and he tackles different, very different genres. Like Five Weapons was like borderline all ages, anybody, you could hand it to over to anybody, even though the title has weapons in it. Bomb Queen is the extreme opposite. It's like adult content, really raunchy humor. And then this one is like a post-apocalyptic alien world with two different societies, and it's amazing. So that was the empty number one. And then we get into Justice League 45, which is the last issue of the Dark Side War, which was really good. The number 44 was like a 5 out of 5. This one dropped a little bit. They had a big reveal in 44, and then 45 continued where that one left off, and kind of leads you into these five minis. The only ones I haven't read so far is Flash and Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor, Dark Side War just came out this week. So, and it's tied in to a lot with what's in the Superman one. Then we have a book. In the last episode, I read Justice League 3001, which is the second one. I actually finished 3001 before I read 3000, and then I went back and I read 3000, and I rated 3000 a 4 out of 5, whereas 3001, I rated that. Where did I put those? Did I forget to log them? Oh no, they're there. They're in the 5 out of 5s for this week. I just didn't see them. So I rated Justice League 3000 2 through 7, because I had read one quite a time ago, and I really liked it. I just never got around to reading the rest. And Justice League 3000 is Jam DeMatteis, Keith Giffen, and Howard Porter series. There are guest artists in there. And it has to do with them cloning. They're not total clones, but I won't give it away. But cloning the superheroes and making them in the future. So you have a Superman, a Batman, a Flash, a Green Lantern, and a Wonder Woman. And then several others come along. And you have these two characters like the Wonder Twins. They're like twins that work for Cadmus that it's makes it look like they're the good guys, and they made these characters to go after the Five. And it flips around and makes you believe a lot of different stuff. And I still don't know the truth, even though I've read the future, if that makes any sense. I have a few issues to catch up, about maybe eight, and we'll see where that goes. But it's been highly, highly enjoyable. I would say that 3001 is either my top DC comic or my second top DC comic. It's somewhere in there, but it's definitely in the top five of what they're putting out right now. So that's how much I like it. I've become really attached to the characters, and as you read on, like, it seems like they had the humor in the early issues, but they had a very serious tone, underlying tone. But as you get towards 3001, it is almost like a replicate of Justice League International. I mean, it's just in the future, but the humor, the characterization is so much like the Kevin Maguire, DeMatteis, and Giffen stuff from the 80s and 90s. So I'd highly, highly recommend it if you're a fan of that, especially 3001. Just jump in and run with it. Then we got Justice League Dark Side War Batman. This was by far my favorite. It has to do with him and the Mobius chair and actually going after the character that killed his parents. And it really was emotional, and it was a really good story. Let me see who wrote that one. I'm pretty sure. That's interesting. This doesn't have it in my database. The information's there, but it's not updated. But I believe it was. I don't remember who it was on art, but whoever was writing Batman and Robin when the New 52 launched. Let me see. I'll give you the name. Peter Tomasi. Yeah, he actually wrote it, and he did a really fantastic job. I highly recommend it. It flows right out of the Justice League, so if you didn't get this, you see Batman on the Mobius chair. It's really important. All of them are really important, but this one's just executed pretty doggone flawlessly, almost a 5 out of 5. That's my last 4 out of 5, and then we get into our 5 out of 5s. And for that, actually, I just found out I missed a book, so I had two Amigos, not just one. I had read Straight Jacket 1 and 2, and this is from Amigo Comics, which is El Torres. Fantastic. Me and Bill are totally in Amigo Comics, and what he's amazing at, El Torres, is writing horror, and this is a horror series. And the artists that he gets are amazing. The artist he got is Guillermo Sana, and this is a story about, I can't even describe if it's real or if it's where the reality is hitting. But it's this young girl, and the parents walk in, and she killed her brother, so they commit her, and she spends all her life in a sane asylum. But her intelligence is incredibly high, and what she sees is a bridge to another world, and nobody believes her. But it appears to the reader and to her that this existence is really happening. And they introduce a new psychiatrist to her, who is handicapped. He's in a wheelchair, and he's trying to help her. And there's some scary ass scenes in this, man. I mean, scenes that you would probably jump out of your chair. El Torres is just amazing at this kind of thing, and I highly recommend it. There's two issues out. It's a 4-issue series. If you can track them down, they're listed as hot now, so that means you're going to probably pay double to triple the cover price. So good luck trying to find them, or you could wait to the trade. The other thing you noticed is that when we were talking about it on Geek Brunch, Bill had mentioned the panel on The Veil, I think it was in issue 2, that pointed to a book called The Veil. And when looking at this, I don't own this book, but it's another 4-issue series from IDW that seems to be a prequel to this. In other words, there's a psychotic condition. I think it's called the Luna syndrome, and I don't know if it's real or if it's just made up. But the character in The Veil is the one that the condition was named after, the Luna syndrome. And so it's like a prequel to this. So I'm like dying. I want to get this, even though it's a different publisher. It was IDW. It's still El Torres. And so I tweeted to El Torres saying, "Man, I really want to seek out your prequel," and I found it. But he says, "If you hold on tight, you might get an announcement soon." So I don't know if they're like gonna re-release it on Amigo, or what's gonna happen. But I want to read this Veil so bad now that I'm reading Straight Jacket, because I am hooked, and I'm all in for Amigo. I buy everything that comes from Amigo. And the next one we got is Marvel's Hail Hydra. This is the new Nomad, and this is an amazing Secret Wars tale, because Rick Remender kind of it flows right out of Captain America, all new Captain America, into this. And I love the way they did it in this alternate world, because it felt continuous from the previous arc. It's like he was well aware that he entered this other world, but all that history and baggage came with him. And then when he got into this weird elevator, he could go back to the 616. It just was a fantastic story arc. And it had his sister, you know. If you don't know who the Nomad is, it was not Baron Zemo. It was man, I can't even think of his name. But it was from the Dimension Z story arc, Zola. He had a son. And that son became Steve Rogers' son in Dimension X. He kind of raised him from a little boy to his current age. And then Steve got old, and then he became Nomad. And Falcon became Captain America. And it kind of flowed right into that story arc. And he had a sister in this series of Hail Hydra. It turned out to be really awesome. And then another 5 out of 5 is another Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows. It's like an alternate world where Spider-Man is married to MJ, and they have a child. And I was a huge fan of Spider-Girl. DeFalco, I can't remember who else did it. Tom DeFalco and Friends, or I can't remember the artist. But anyway, it was fantastic. I didn't think I would like Spider-Girl. I discovered it way late and became hugely addicted to the character, who was the daughter of Peter and Mary Jane. And this one is in this alternate battle world patch. Spider-Man is at a point in this little segment where heroes are dying. You know, Daredevil's dead. Some of the FF are dead. He wants to retire, and it doesn't look like he can. And he's trying to keep his daughter. She has abilities and is very, very young, out of this world. And it's just a fantastic story. It's really cool. I can't wait to finish it, even though I just got distracted so much with trees, where I just couldn't put it down, or else I would have finished it. Then we got Ninjak number 10. It just came out this week, but I had our podcast gets preview copies, like to preview, and I read 10, and oh my God, was it good! It's where Ninjak and Punk Mambo have to go into the dead side, and I absolutely love Punk Mambo, and Matt Kent like nails her character. She's so good. The art is phenomenal. The story is phenomenal. I am so into this. I can't wait. I can't wait to see Shadow Man again. I am so excited. He's one of my favorite characters. And we'll see where that goes. And then we get into Justice League 3001, oh, 3 through 5, caught up on this series. And absolutely amazing. I can't wait to keep caught up on this because I'm so invested in it. And 3001 has turned out to be some of my favorite comics of the year. So this book, I don't know how much longer it has, but if you can track down 1 through 5, and if you read it and don't like it, I would be shocked. I really would. Especially if you are into the Justice League International by the same creative team. Except now it's Howard Porter. There's a lot of guest artists in this one when Howard Porter takes a break. But man, I'd highly recommend that you check it out. And there's other characters like the humor gets, because there's a Guy Gardner's in this one, the DNA Guy Gardner, except he comes back as a woman, but he really thinks he's still a man, and Superman's trying to pick up on him and stuff like that. But man, did 5 end with a cliffhanger, and I don't know what to think. I really don't after that. So I would check out Justice League 3001, and that is the last of the books. Actually, again, I forgot to put a book down. Son of a bitch, I read number 6. So I had 41 books. God damn it, I hate when I forget to put these in my sheet. But that what makes 19 DC Comics. Because I read, it was ranked at 5 out of 5s. It was Justice League 3001, 3 through 6. And I said 3 through 5. I forgot to put it down. So I'm at 40, 41. Which is pretty good reads. I mean, it's a pretty good content. I really need to be at 51 or 55 or pretty much 60 to keep caught up. But that's all I have to say. I want to again thank Drew for the iTunes review. It's really appreciated. If you get a chance, go check out Comics for Fun and Profit and tell them I sent you. I really enjoy it. Like I said, they have one episode where they talk about the books coming out for the next week, at least what they're going to spec on, and then the other one that they release is what they read that for that particular week, and they usually give you like a 1 to 2 week buffer, so you won't get too spoiled if they go over a book if you keep up to date. I listen even if I haven't read the books and I don't feel like I get spoiled, but give it a shot. I think you're gonna like the banter between the two brothers, and also check out Drew on the comic book page. Those are two podcasts that I always listen to. Thanks again for the iTunes review. Please leave an iTunes review if you enjoy the show. Go to Geek Brunch on iTunes and just leave a review. Write one up and give it a rating. I would appreciate it. And if you don't have iTunes, the other thing I could ask if you're on Facebook or if you're on Twitter, if you share the episode with, retweet it or share it on Facebook, that would be very helpful. So if on Facebook you can go to Geek Brunch Podcast and you can find all the threads for Mike M's Weekly Reads, Geek Brunch Retro, with me and Chris Ivy, where we talk about older books, and Geek Brunch, where me and Beale Bulmer talk about TV, movies, and comics every other week. So you can check out those. And then there's also DC Noise on DC Noise Podcast, where it's me, Keith, and Daryl. And we just have a lot of fun on that one. And we probably have the most loyal listeners I've ever seen on DC Noise. The best iTunes review ever. We have 91 reviews. And if you read them, you'll get a sense of what DC Noise is about, especially over the last, you know, 2-3 years. So having said that, if you need to reach me, you could also send me feedback at mike@comicbooknoise.com. I'll read your email on the show, or you can tweet me at Mike Myers Brunch. Until next time, have a good one and read a lot of comics. Bye-bye.